Some of the greatest surprises in commonplace experience are discoveries of the nearness of that which was supposed to be the inaccessibly remote. It seems that the moon is close to this earth, because of the phenomenon of earthshine. The same appearance has been seen upon the planet Venus. If upon the moon, it is light reflecting from this earth and back to this earth, what is it upon Venus? It is some unexplained optical illusion, says Newcomb, Popular Astronomy, p. 296. For a list of more than 20 observations upon this illumination of Venus, see Report BA, 1873-404. It is our expression that the phenomenon is unexplained because it does indicate that Venus is millions of miles closer to this Earth than Venus should be. Unknown objects have been seen near Venus. There were more than 30 such observations in the 18th century, not relating to so many different periods, however. Our own earliest datum is Webb's observation, of May 22, 1823. I know of only one astronomer who has supposed that these observations could relate to a Venusian satellite, pronouncedly visible sometimes, and then for many years being invisible, something else will have to be thought of. If these observations and others that we shall have, be accepted, they relate to unknown bulks that have, from outer space, gone to Venus, and have been in temporary suspension near the planet, even though the shade of Sir Isaac Newton would curdle at the suggestion. If, acceptably, from outer space, something could go to the planet Venus, one is not especially startled with the idea that something could sail out from the planet Venus visit this Earth, conceivably. In the Report BA, 1852-835, it is said that, early in the morning of September 11, 1852, several persons at Fair Oaks, Staffordshire, had seen, in the eastern sky, a luminous object. It was first seen at 4:15 a.m. It appeared and disappeared several times, until 4:45 a.m., when it became finally invisible. Then, at almost the same place in the sky, Venus was seen, having risen above the eastern horizon. These persons sent the records of their observations to Lord Wriothesley, an astronomer whose observatory was at Wolverhampton. There is published a letter from Lord Wriothesley, who says that at first he had thought that the supposititiously unknown object was Venus, with perhaps an extraordinary halo, but that he had received from one of the observers a diagram giving such a position relatively to the moon that he hesitated so to identify. It was in the period of nearest approach to this Earth by Venus, and, since inferior conjunction, July 20, 1852, Venus had been a morning star. If this thing in the sky were not Venus, the circumstances are that an object came close to this Earth, perhaps, and for a while was stationary, as if waiting for the planet Venus to appear above the eastern horizon, then disappearing, whether to sail to Venus or not. We think that perhaps this thing did come close to this Earth, because it was, it seems, seen only in the local sky of Fair Oaks. However, if, according to many of our data, professional astronomers have missed extraordinary appearances at reasonable hours, we can't conclude much from what was not reported by them, after 4 o'clock in the morning. I do not know whether this is the origin of the convention or not, but this is the first note I have upon the now standardized explanation that, when a luminous object is seen in the sky at the time of nearest approach by Venus, it is Venus, attracting attention by her great brilliance, exciting persons, unversed in astronomic matters, into thinking that a strange object had visited this Earth. When reports are definite as to motions of a seemingly sailing or exploring, luminous thing, astronomers say that it was a fire balloon. In the Kept. BA, 1856-54, it is said that, according to Mrs. Ayling and friends, in a letter to Lord Wriothesley, a bright object had been seen in the sky of Petworth, Sussex, night of August 11, 1855. According to description, it rose from behind hills, in the distance, at 11:30. It was a red body, or it was a red appearing construction, because from it were projections like spokes of a wheel, or they were stationary rays, in the words of the description. Like a red moon, it rose slowly, and diminished slowly, remaining visible 1 hour and a half. Upon August 11, 1855, Venus was 2 weeks from primary greatest brilliance, inferior conjunction occurring upon September 30. The thing could not have been Venus, ascending in the sky, at this time of night. An astonishing thing, like a red moon, perhaps with spokes like a wheel's, might, if reported from nowhere else, be considered something that came from outer space so close to this Earth that it was visible only in a local sky, except that it might have been visible in other places, and even half past 11 at night may be an unheard of hour for astronomers, who specialize upon sunspots for a reason that is clearing up to us. Of course, an ordinary fire balloon could be extraordinarily described. June 8, 1868. I have not the exact time, but one does suspect that it was early in the evening, an object that was reported from Radcliffe Observatory, Oxford. It looked like a comet, but inasmuch as it was reported only from Radcliffe, it may have been in the local sky of Oxford. It seemed to sail in the sky, it moved and changed its course. At first it was stationary, then it moved westward, then southward, then turning north, visible 4 minutes. CN. Mech, 7-351. According to a correspondent to the Birmingham Gazette, May 28, 1868, there had been an extraordinary illumination upon Venus, some nights before, a red spot, visible for a few seconds, night of May 27. In the issue of the Gazette, of June 1, someone else writes that he saw this light appearing and disappearing upon Venus. Upon March 15, Browning had seen something that looked like a little shaft of light from Venus, ENG Mech, 40-130, and upon April 6, Webb had seen a similar appearance, Celestial Objects, p. 57. At the time of the appearance at Oxford, Venus was in the period of nearest approach, inferior conjunction July 16, 1868. I think, myself, that there was one approximately great, wise astronomer. He was Tycho Brahe. For many years, he would not describe what he saw in the sky, because he considered it beneath his dignity to write a book. The undignified, or more or less literary, or sometimes altogether too literary, astronomers, who do write books, uncompromisingly say that when a luminous object is said to have moved to greater degree than could be considered illusory, in a local sky of this earth, it is a fire balloon. It is not possible to find in the writings of astronomers who so explain, mention of the object that was seen by Coggia, night of August 1, 1871. It seems that this thing was not far away, and did appear only in a local sky of this earth, and if it did come from outer space, how it could have boarded this earth, if this earth moves at a rate of 19 miles a second, or 1 mile a second, is so hard to explain that why Proctor and Hind, with their passionate itch for explaining, never took the matter up, I don't know. Upon August 1, 1871, an unknown luminous object was seen in the sky of Marseilles, by Coggia, Comptes Rendus, 73-398. According to description, it was a magnificent red object. It appeared at 10:43 p.m., and moved eastward, slowly, until 10 hours 52 minutes and 30 seconds. It stopped, moved northward, and again, at 10 hours 59 minutes and 30 seconds, was stationary. It turned eastward again, and, at 11:03:20, disappeared, or fell behind the horizon. Upon this night Venus was within 3 weeks of primary greatest brilliance, inferior conjunction occurring upon September 25, 1871. 15. 1. Repeating mystery, the mystery of the local sky. How, if this earth be a moving earth, could anything sail to, fall to, or in any other way reach this earth, without being smashed into fine particles by the impact? This earth is supposed to rip space at a rate of about 19 miles a second. Concepts smash when one tries to visualize such an accomplishment. Now, three times over, we shall have other aspects of this one mystery of the local sky. First we shall take up data upon seeming relation between a region of this earth that is subject to earthquakes, or so-called earthquakes, and appearances in the sky of this especial region, and the repeating falls of objects and substances from this local sky and nowhere else at the times. We have had records of quakes that occurred at Irkutsk, Siberia, and of stones that fell from the sky to Irkutsk. Upon March 8, 1829, a severe quake, preceded by clattering sounds, was felt at Irkutsk. There was something in the sky. Dr. Ehrman, the geologist, was in Irkutsk, at the time. In the report of the British Association, 1854-20, it is said that, in Dr. Ehrman's opinion, the sounds that preceded the quake were in the sky. The situation at Comorie, Perthshire, is similar. A stone fell, May 17, 1830, in the earthquake region around Comorie. It fell at Perth, 22 miles from Comorie. See Fletcher's List, p. 100. Upon February 15, 1837, a black powder fell upon the Comorie region, Eden. New Philosophy Jour, 31-293. October 12, 1839, a quake at Comorie. According to the Reverend M. Walker, of Comorie, the sky, at the time, was peculiarly strange and alarming, and appeared as if hung with sackcloth. In Mallet's Catalogue, Report B.A., 1854-290, it is said that, throughout the month of October, shocks were felt at Comorie, sometimes slight and sometimes severe like distant thunder or reports of artillery. The noise sometimes seemed to be high in the air, and was often heard without any sensible shock. Upon the 23rd of October, occurred the most violent quake in the whole series of phenomena at Comorie. See the Eden. New Phil. Jour, Volume 32. All data in this publication were collected by David Milne. According to the Reverend M. Maxton, of Foulis Manse, 10 miles from Comorie, rattling sounds were heard in the sky, preceding the shock that was felt. In Volume 33, p. 373, of the journal, someone who lived 7 miles from Comorie is quoted, "In every case, I am inclined to say that the sound proceeded not from underground. The sound seemed high in the air." Someone who lived at Gowrie, 40 miles from Comorie, is quoted, "The most general opinion seems to be that the noise accompanying the concussion proceeded from above." See Volume 34, p. 87, another impression of explosion overhead and concussion underneath, the noises heard first seemed to be in the air, and the rumbling sound in the earth. Milne's own conclusion: it is plain that there are, connected with the earthquake shocks, sounds both in the earth and in the air, which are distinct and separate. If, upon the 23rd of October, 1839, there was a tremendous shock, not of subterranean origin, but from a great explosion in the sky of Comorie, and if this be accepted, there will be concussions somewhere else. The faults of dogmas will open, there will be seismic phenomena in science. I have a feeling of a conventional survey of the Scottish sky, vista of a fair, blue, vacant expanse. Our suspicions daub the impression with black alarms, but also do we project detonating stimulations into the fair and blue, but unoccupied and meaningless. One cannot pass this single occurrence by, considering it only in itself. It is one of a long series of quakes of the earth at Comorie and phenomena in the sky at Comorie. We have stronger evidence than the mere supposition of many persons, in and near Comorie, that, upon October 23, 1839, something had occurred in the sky, because sounds seemed to come from the sky. Milne says that clothes, bleaching on the grass, were entirely covered with black particles which presumably had fallen from the sky. The shocks were felt in November. In November, according to Milne, a powder like soot fell from the sky upon Comorie and surrounding regions. In his report to the British Association, 1840, Milne, reviewing the phenomena from the year 1788, says, "Occasionally there was a fall of fine, black powder.